When Ron and I were talking about the music for today and what songs to do, we wound up, partly by coincidence and partly on purpose, with a set of songs that have been reperformed each generation. I realized this when we were emailing about I Can't Help Falling in Love, and Ron told a story about how decades ago he rewrote the version of this with the reggae beat that we sang because it seemed like a natural fit. And then walking around the grocery store, heard on the radio overhead the version by UB40. What was a cover to Ron was the version that I grew up with. That's the one that I knew. And perhaps some of you heard that song in Ingrid Michaelson's version, which is pretty new, or others of you heard, like I did, the UB40 version. And if you want to really go back to 1994, watch the video online, because boy, what we were doing, I don't know. And others of you heard the smooth voice of Elvis Presley singing the original version. There are more versions of The Bramble and the Rose than you can count. And when Jenny just sang Make You Feel My Love, some of you thought of Adele's version, while others of you heard Billy Joel in your mind, while it was Bob Dylan who wrote it. Good love songs keep coming back over and over again. Some things are eternal, persistent, real, undeniable. Some feelings just are part of what it means to be human, what it means to be alive, what it means to desire, to want, to connect, to surrender, to hold and be held. Call it the impulse of evolution, call it the dopamine occasioned by loving touch, call it the need to not be alone, call it the fire of human longing. This feeling, this want, this joy of being is deep within almost all of us. It waxes and wanes in our own life, of course, but in every corner and in every age, we mostly can't help falling in love. And sometimes it's all we ever wanted, to sit by the fire, to feast in the garden, to lie in the grass, and to be wanted in equal measure to our wanting. This is a fact of being human. We desire. From the tips of our toes to the ends of our fingers, we want. Susan Griffin says that when we make love, we become more natural, and the conventions and controls can slip away, and we are real and present and hungry. This is both about sexuality and not about sexuality, by the way. The paradigmatic case of desire is about human touch and about the joy of mutuality, but it's not the only location of desire. This is important, really important. Our hunger for aliveness, for connection, for embodied joy, our erotic longing, isn't just answered in sexuality. It might be, and is often, answered in a whole variety of other ways. Making art, reading poetry, hearing music, dancing, running, playing sports, out in nature, deep in the playful mind itself. When we transcend the ordinary through right here, right now, when we come alive to the beating heart of ourselves, this too is eros. This is desire alive. This is longing answered. In other words, sex is not the only way to get turned on. Don't let anyone tell you that it is. For all of us, and especially for some of us, it's important to lift up these other ways of turning up the heat, of coming alive, so that our understanding of desire is multidimensional. Being multidimensional about desire is what our readings are about. Katie Ford wants us to sit by the fire. Susan Griffin wants us to feel each other without the interference of culture. And Song of Solomon, we'll get to that part. But I want to spend a moment with Susan Griffin because her work on this subject is formative of how I want us to think about this. Her argument is that the erotic is not and should not be about what culture thinks it is about. Control or conquest or titillation. Not about sin or secrets, but about wholeness. About being alive to your senses, your sensuality, the body and the soul united as one. And that means that sexuality must involve full, affirmative, joyful, honest desire. It's not enough to say that all parties must give their consent. Consent is the bare minimal standard. Now, in our current era, we are finally saying what sex educators have been saying for decades, that we need affirmative consent. Not just they didn't say no, but they said yes. It's a big difference. A spiritual understanding of sexuality, I think, goes further. It encourages us to want not just a yes, but a hell yes. I choose this picture up on the screen because the people are both leaning in. That's what we want, leaning in. In a committed and honest relationship, of course, sometimes one party will be more hungry than the other on any given day. That's real. But what we seek is a back and forth, an ebb and flow, to be wanted in rough equality to our wanting. This is about the multidimensionality of eros, about the fullness of it, the strength, the power, the wonder, the mystery, and I, the sacredness of it. We approach that state more or less in different moments. Not everything is an erotic high of wholeness and connection. Sometimes pretty good is pretty great, and that's the best it's going to be. But feeling alive, being embodied, feeling connected, is larger and wider than culture's narrow definitions. It's more than domination or property and the structures of control, and it always has been. That's the point about the music that comes back over and over again. This has always been the case. Eros, the Greek god who embodies this feeling of connection and desire, was originally tall, strong, and powerful, a son of chaos, the first god. But over generations, he literally shrank. He became a child of Aphrodite. Some of his power, the power to intoxicate with joy, was ceded to Dionysus, the god of grapes and wine. That's Eros on your right and Dionysus on the left. Eros grew smaller and younger, and eventually became a small, rotund child with a bow and arrow, Cupid. But Cupid is a pale imitation of Eros. Controlled, enclosed in cards and routine gestures, confined by heteronormative expectations and tropes. Eros wants to run free. Not free in the sense that affirmative consent or some basic caution and common sense doesn't count. That's not what free means. Free means alive, whole, real, present to the moment, aflame. Restrained only by genuine regard for oneself and for others in equal measure. Eros wants to play. It wants to tease and laugh and shout. Whether your ecstasy is dancing, singing, making art, learning, making love, any of those ways or more, Eros wants to shout, yes. This longing for the erotic yes is present in every age and every time. And efforts to hide it, to say we only talk about it in whispers, are not helpful or honest. It's a hugely important part of our lives, so let's talk about it. It's a hugely important part of our spiritual lives, too, though sometimes the narrow channels of religious authority act like it doesn't exist. I've mentioned from this pulpit before that the college that I went to, a small rural college in Washington State, used to have as their mascot the Fighting Missionaries. They've recently changed it, actually, because, you know, it's the 21st century and that's not really appropriate anymore. I got a survey where we could vote for our new mascot. But when I went there 20 years ago, we were the fighting missionaries, and we didn't have a football team, but we had to have a lacrosse team and a basketball team, and there was a school chant. Missionaries, missionaries, we're on top. Some of you will have your parents explain that joke in a few years. It's okay. It remains the doctrine of some religious traditions that eroticism for its own sake is a sin, that you should only have sex in order to produce children in a heterosexual marriage. Nonsense. That position is against joy, ignorant of science, and unbiblical. Yes, it is unbiblical. Only one part of the Song of Solomon or the Song of Songs is in the Revised Common Lectionary, which Protestants use. A lovely part from chapter 2, "My love is like the gazelle." Some of you know that part. Chapter 4, which I read to you, is not in the Revised Common Lectionary. It's too bad. Reading it, I thought, is that too hot for church? Even this church? But no, it's in there for a reason. If you take, as we do, Scripture as an account of humanity, trying to understand the experience of being human, trying to grapple with what matters, what is true and what is holy, then of course there is a part of the text that is for lovers. Lovers who delight in the scent of each other, the taste of each other, the feel of each other, who come to the garden to feast, who revel in each other. Because this is good. Indeed, it is very good. Besides, if you can't read 3,000-year-old biblical erotic poetry in a Unitarian church, what is a Unitarian church even about? Seriously, that's what we're here for. We're about the full life, the spiritually alive life. And our religious and spiritual values matter here too. I want us to remember that our ancestors considered their erotic lives, their desire, their embodied joy, to be part of their whole life, not locked away in a separate compartment. At its best, Eros is a god with many faces. A smiling cherub might be one of them, but not the only one. Another face might be ancient and worn and wise and alive to the simple pleasure. Another face might be slack, at ease with release. Another face has its eyes closed, fingers splayed, breathing in. Eros is multi-layered, as our lives should be multi-layered. There are lots of ways to be spiritually alive. Getting turned on is one of them, and there are a lot of ways to get turned on. That's the good news of Eros. It's why we can't help falling in love, because we long, we desire. And when that desire is answered in equal measure, we become alive. Powerful, natural, electric, which is part of who we are. And we can't help falling in love with life itself, with our own bodies and other bodies, with our own souls and other bodies and other souls. We can't help falling in love through the good times and the bad, because life is good. Not puppies and rainbows good all the time, obviously, but heartbreak and joy and awesome and good when we are paying attention. When we get out of the confines and the limits, when we feel, when we join the dance, when we feel the flame, when we see the beauty, when we see the beauty in ourselves, when we let go and when we hold on, when we say, hell yes, because there are moments. There are moments when Eros is alive in us, when the many layers of desire sing in harmony in us, when we say thank you, when we say thank you, when we say amen. Let's rise in body or spirit, sing together, let it be a dance.